Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the 10 best spiritual books that inspired her life journey is author, speaker, power traits coach, Beatles fan, and mystery book lover, Mariemma Willis, who has two major passions in her life. The first is coaching children and their families to understand and appreciate their natural gifts and abilities. And the second is coaching adults to recuperate from negative growing up experiences that keep them from discovering their passions and their potentials. Mariemma holds a BS in psychology, an MS in education, and California life teaching credentials for regular and special education. She was the director of a private learning center for children with learning disabilities before going into private practice. After 13 years of assessing and treating children and adults for learning dysfunctions, she knew she could no longer follow this erroneous and harmful model of education and began researching alternatives back in the 1970s. Definitely a woman who was ahead of her time. She's also the author of several books, including Midlife Crisis Begins in Kindergarten, Learning Doesn't Have to Hurt, and Discover Your Child's Learning Style, and the co-founder of Power Traits for Life and the Learning Success Institute, where parents and teachers learn to drop destructive labels such as dyslexic or ADHD and coach all kids for real learning success. A woman after my own heart. Mariemma Willis, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So from heartwarming stories and mystery books to psychology, philosophy, theology, spirituality and personal growth, your tastes in literature run the gamut, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah, so, well, for fun, it's mysteries. That's my fun.
Yeah. So I have to assume then that distilling your list down to 10 was quite a challenge.
When you first asked me a couple of months ago, I mean, I wanted to do it. I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? And so for a few weeks, I just kept thinking about it. Then I started pulling books off the shelves in every room of my house, practically. And I sat with them and they were like surrounding me while I was doing things. And then I would say, oh no, I just thought of another one. I'd pull that. And so I don't know, there were like 30 books or something. And it was just like intuition of, you know, this one has to go, this one has to stay, this one. It was hard. Even up to the last minute when I was writing the descriptions.
Yeah, it is a cruel task, isn't it? And I get people writing to me after their lists have been published and saying, oh, I've just thought of another one. Can I change one?
Yes.
So do you recall the first spiritual book that really, really kind of, you know, lit up your life?
Oh, my gosh. I would have to say it would be something by a priest named Henri Nouwen, or Nouwen, depending on how you pronounce it. Mm. His books are just beautiful, about all kinds of topics, but mostly about knowing yourself and your soul and who you really are. Mm. And I didn't put him on the list because again, there are just so many books, but I think that that would probably be the first, and that would be many, many years ago.
So is that the one that is on your list? Because you've got one of his.
You know, do I have one by him? I don't
you
even
do have one by him.
I do. It's the
yes.
It's
our greatest gift. Our meditation on dying and caring.
See what I mean? I have so many books that I need to remember that. Yes, that was an amazing book. He's had it for a long time. In fact, it's been on my shelf for a long time, and I didn't realize I even had it. Mm. And I ordered it for a book club. And then later I thought, I've had this on my shelf. I've read many books by him, but for some reason didn't read this one. And I read this one just last year.
Well, we'll get into that one a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
Long. Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, do you know, I've forgotten what I wanted to ask you.
That happens.
Oh, I know. Is the list that you gave me, mm-hmm. I've got it in the order. We're going to address it in the order that you gave me. Is it a chronological? It's not in the order that
it's you not listened. Really. No, it's no. Not really chronological. I could really pick any one of them. Again, I just like I look at this was the very best one, and then I look at this is the very best one, and I really can't decide.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the first book on your list. Mm-hmm. This One Wild and Precious Life, The Path to Connection in a Fractured World by Sarah Wilson. This was just published a few years ago in 2020.
Yeah. So the very recent book in a red. I can't even describe this book. People just have to read it. But the fact that, you know, what do I want to say about this? Our big question here is, does this choice enlarge or diminish? And just to use that as a measure for everything, this woman is the most amazing woman I've ever read about. She took like basically a small tote bag with the only clothes she was taking with her and went hiking like for years at a time, just to all these amazing places. The connection with nature brings back to herself. It's just amazing. And she connects it with literature and science and of course, all kinds of amazing people. I want to say educated, or I don't know, she knows everything. She did just these amazing things. And one of the things that really, really made impression on me is that at some point her company was very big and they had to do something to go to the next level. And she didn't want to do any of those things because they were all like, nobody would be taking it on in the way she meant it to be passed on. So she didn't want to sell her company. She finally decided, I'm not selling it. She had the brilliant idea of just selling parts, selling her recipe, selling this, sell that, but not her company name, the company itself. Well, that inspired me and my business partner to do the same thing with ours. And I mean, we had been thinking about what to do. And when we read that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's the answer. And it sounds like such a business thing that it's, you know, that's about business, not spirituality, but it's not. It's about everything. It's about what you have in your priorities and how you want to pass on something very important to you that you want people to learn from. So that was just one little thing. It's just filled with the whole connection to nature is just the most amazing thing.
Yeah. You said in your write-up, you said that she takes us through her own story of grappling with all kinds of issues like climate change, political polarization, social injustice, the coronavirus pandemic, while also grappling with her own issues and what she calls being in a state of spiritual PTSD. What do you think she meant by that phrase?
Well, that was very largely connected to the pandemic, that particular thing. Although she's been writing for years, I realized, about how we're getting more and more disconnected from each other, from nature, from, you know, who we really are. And so that's what the PTSD is. But when the pandemic hit, it was like that was really something that brought it to a head. And so we were all, that was what we were experiencing. I mean, that's a great word for it, I think. People, I just kind of picture it as just kind of like moving about, not knowing where you are, what you're doing. And so that's what she meant. And it was nature that helped her connect back. It was one of the reasons she just said, I'm taking this year, 2 years. I don't remember exactly how long it was. And although she always is in nature, but this was like total nature for months and months. And she is so tuned in to our environment and waste and taking care of the earth. She talks about being in a restaurant and like if she sees people are leaving the table and they left water in their glass, she saves the water. She has something with her to save the water or just take it out and water a plant outside. She's just so tuned in.
She offers some great advice and some practices for reconnecting with ourselves, you wrote. And they include go to your edge, buy less, live more, become a soul nerd, get full fat spiritual, hike, just hike, practice wild activism. It sounds like a real force of nature.
It's lovely. It's a lovely book. I couldn't put it down. You know, I mean, it was like comparable to my mystery stories where I can't put them down to see what's going to happen next.
So book number two is The Dance, Move into the Rhythms of Your True Self. One of my favorites, Araya Mountain Dreamer. She is an acclaimed author, and I just love her book, The Invitation.
Well, I've had this one for many, many years. And what drew me to it, as I said in the write-up, is I think they've changed the cover since then because I've seen a couple different covers. But this is what it was when I got the book. And it says, what if the question is not, why am I so infrequently the person I really want to be? But why do I so infrequently want to be the person I really am? And that just spoke to me, especially since with my work, it's all about being yourself, loving yourself, those wonderful strengths and traits and talents and whatever that you have, and being that rather than thinking you're not enough. And so that's what this book really is all about, that. And you know, on the jacket, it says, what would you do if you knew you were enough just as you are today? If you knew, really knew, you were in your essential nature, a compassionate, gentle, being capable of being fully present with yourself and the world, would you trust yourself more? And that's really what the whole book is about. And the dance meaning how you interact with yourself, with others, to be that compassionate, gentle human.
Yeah, she truly is one of those special people, you know, who writes something that just cuts straight through to your heart and you feel it. I contacted her. I invited her to be on this. But she is basically in retreat now. She doesn't want to have a public life anymore. She was very, very sweet, but that book, The Invitation, made a huge impression on me.
She's very private, and and yet in the book, at least in this book, she shares some very intimate things about herself, which is helpful for people because they are, you know, common emotions and feelings and circumstances that they that can happen to people, but those examples help even more to make the point. And then another question she asks is, how would you plan your day if you really knew you belonged to God, if you believed you were an embodiment of the sacred mystery surrounded and held by the beloved? I mean, you could think about that could be a meditation for, I don't know, the rest of your life or something.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
So book number three is Steering by Starlight, The Science and Magic of Finding Your Destiny by Martha Beck. And this one was published in 2009. I think we're actually seeing it back to front.
You're what?
From this side, we're actually seeing it.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Back to front. Well, anyway,
that's the book. Martha Beck is one of my favorite authors as well. I've read other books of hers. And again, it really goes deep into thinking about who you are, finding your destiny, really just relaxing and being you. But first we have to get rid of all the junk that's surrounding that, right?
Or that we are not. She calls the self the stargazer. We are stargazers.
Mm. Yeah. So we can find our star. I mean, that's the whole thing. Our own North Star that guides us. Yeah. And she talks about dissolving three stages. Dissolving all the old messages that keep you from going forward, then dreaming it, like visioning what you are about and what you are supposed to be doing in the world, and then daring to do it. So
you had the paperback and the audio, and you said they were quite different experiences.
Oh my gosh. I got the book because I just love, I have to have a book that I can underline and stuff. But someone gave me the audio. I don't even remember how I got it. And it's so funny and so entertaining. I mean, she's very humorous. If anybody that's ever heard her speak or read some of her books. And so, of course, the humor comes through in the books. But she reads the book herself in the audio. And she's hilarious. I mean, I loved listening to her. And I had it in my car. So whenever I went somewhere, and sometimes I was so engaged that I would stop on the, I would park so that I could keep listening because I didn't want to stop it at that point. Mm-hmm. And when one of the things she talks about is our reptilian brain that wants to take over, and it has, it has a good role. It warns us and alerts us to danger and all of that. But if it's just with us all the time, it tells us everything is dangerous and we can't do anything. So she talks about, are we going to have the wizard or the lizard guiding us?
Book number four is Humankind, A Hopeful History by Rutger Bregman, and that was published in 2019. And you say you first heard about this on a news show.
Yes. I don't remember, who it was. It might have been on MSNBC. Sometimes they have guests and, authors. And I wrote the name of the book down because I thought it sounded pretty interesting. And I ordered it. And then it sat on my coffee table. And then I finally picked it up because I have so many books to read, right? Anyway. This is a super book. It's all about assuming goodness all of these authors are saying the same thing in a little bit different way. We're made for connection, for compassion, for gentleness, for kindness. And what this book does is give stories and studies that back up that we really are made for that. Whereas so many people in the world at large assumes that people are mostly bad, and this is about mostly good. And so what really impressed me was he starts with Lord of the Flies. I think everybody's familiar with that book. I think everybody's read it at school. Anyway, we know the story. These boys get, shipwrecked. They're on an island, and it doesn't take very long for them to start fighting and being bullies and whatever, and it's really bad stuff happens. So he couldn't believe that. So this is just one of the stories that he, you know, thought, I need to research more on this. He found actual boys that were shipwrecked and were on an island. And I don't remember now if it was for a year before they were found. It was a long time. They were boys from a private school, and they decided that they were going to have an adventure that day. Only the adventure turned into sort of a disaster, and they really were shipwrecked. And nobody knew where they were, where they had gone. And so, I mean, I'm just going to read from here, because by the time they were rescued, they were teenagers. They had set up a food garden, a rainwater storage system, a gym, and many other creations using ingenuity and crude tools that they made. They also developed duty rosters, a process for settling arguments. They began and ended their days with a song and prayer. This is what really happened when these six teenagers were all by themselves. And then he's got just lots of similar stories like that.
Faith in human nature.
Absolutely, yeah. He talks about a prison in Norway that is totally different, and the recidivism rate is very, very low compared to the US and other countries, where they treat them like, you know, people. And but they work, they grow their own food, they do all kinds of things. So he assumes goodness and that generosity and collaboration are realistic expectations of just about everyone.
Well, book five is the one you mentioned earlier, which is Our Greatest Gift, a Meditation on Dying and Caring by Henri Nouwen. And this was published in 2009. And it's a beautiful book on, with a completely different perspective on dying, you know, a whole new way of thinking about dying and caring for the dying.
So, and I mentioned here that my brother died last year, and two other people, my cousin and then a priest friend that was very close to us. And this book popped up. I had not read it. It was on my shelf. I didn't even remember it. It's so beautiful. It's how the dying, he talks a lot about the dying, what they offer, the gifts that they give to the people around them, and that sort of mutual gift giving to each other. And the idea that, you know, people are scared of people who are dying, some of it probably is because it scares them about their own dying or other people dying, but also they never know what to say. Oh, you're dying, you know. So he changes all of that and shows how it can just be normal engagement with each other. And then the gifts that are offered by that person who's dying. And he was at this community where he was surrounded by this. So it's a really remarkable book, because you can see it's very small, easy to read. So, but I go back to it often. There's just this one quote: in a mysterious way, the people dying all over the world because of starvation, oppression, illness, despair, violence, and war become our teachers. And that's one of the things that he brings out, how that works.
In the prologue, he poses the question, is it possible to prepare for our death with the same attentiveness that our parents had in preparing for our birth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very deep question to think about.
Yes, indeed.
And he shares his own experiences with aging and loss and grief and fear and all of that.
I think there are many, many books that are being published now about dying and trying to change our perceptions about the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good thing. A really good thing. Well, we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back with more of Mariana Willis's 10 Best Books after this break. So stay tuned.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com, click on the Work With Me tab, and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Mariana Willis. Let's look at book number 6, which is the very well-known The 5 People You Meet in Heaven. And also, you slipped a second one in, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven by Mitch Albom. So, you've listed them as two books because you say they really are parts 1 and 2 of the same story.
They are. The story continues in the next book. And it's so amazing because, again, it's one of those things you just have to read it to get it. But these people in the first book, different things happen, and you could say that some of them are tragedies, you know, bad things that are happening to people. But then they're in heaven, and they didn't know each other on earth. A lot of them didn't know each other. And now they're connecting with each other and realizing how they actually affected each other in good ways and what was really going on. And so it's connected. So the second book continues that. And it just shows how somebody's life, even when you don't know, well, we don't know. That's the whole point. We don't know the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And so this life is impacting different people. We're impacting, they're impacting us, but we don't have the whole picture. And if we did, we would see how good it all was or is.
Yeah. And these books helped you at a time when you suffered a lot of loss.
This is another one that I was reading last year. And it was, I mean, it was just like they were telling me, oh, look, the same thing is happening for these people. They're in heaven and they're seeing the whole picture of how everything is woven together and you don't have to worry about them. And it was all fine. So, yeah, they just leave you with that sense of peace.
Yeah. Yeah. Book number 7, Stumbling on Happiness by Harvard psychologist Daniel Todd Gilbert, published in 2006.
This book is very different from anything else, but I just, in a way, it reminds me a little bit of Martha Beck's book of Steering by Starlight. In that, he talks about, okay, so we said about that reptilian brain, but the thing about a reptile is if there's danger, something happens right now, there's danger and they go, you know, and they run away or whatever they do. When it's over, it's over. It could be 10 minutes later. It's over. They're back to their normal whatever. And both Martha Beck and this guy bring out that it's not over for us, for humans, because we can keep thinking and thinking and thinking and see the future or project the future and all that. It's both a blessing and a curse that we can project the future. But one of the things we do is we play that thing over and over and over again. That happened to us. And that's the whole worry cycle. And what if it happens again? And what happens if this and if that, instead of just letting it go, we're done. It happened. We're done. We're fine now. So that, he starts out by saying, and he's also very funny. I heard the audio on this one too before I bought the book because I needed the book to underline and all. But he's pretty funny on this and very entertaining to listen to. And he says that most psychologists, before they write a book, they've got the theme of the human is the only one that of all the animals that does blah blah blah. But so many of them have been disproved. Like the only one that can use language or tools, et cetera. So he wasn't going to publish a book until he was sure he had the right phrase. And his phrase is, the human being is the only animal that thinks about the future. Mm. And that's what the blessing or the curse can be. So he really goes through a lot of studies and backing things up while being very humorous about it, and showing how we can misinterpret we can overestimate and underestimate, and we can be so disappointed when we think we can see, oh, it's going to be like this and we're going to have that and that. And then that doesn't happen. So he talks a lot about how to diffuse that. And it's a great book.
Number 8 is The Happiness Project, or Why I Spent a Year Trying to Sing in the Morning, Clean My Closets, Fight Right, Read Aristotle, and Generally Have More Fun by Gretchen Rubin.
Do you know Gretchen Rubin? Do you know
her? No, I haven't read any of her work.
Oh, yeah. I love this book. She is, she explored for a whole year how you could be happier. And a lot of it is doing things that you really want to do, but you just never did them or don't find the time for them. So she takes you through all of that. It's month by month. So she picks a theme in each month to go through. And there's like some of the themes are vitality, work, leisure, friendship. So for example, in leisure, really think about what do you need in your downtime? What do you want for fun? And then pick a few and do them. Yeah. For relationships, what would you really like to do? Pick a few and do them. For those people who are very organized and want to chart and all of that, she even has that for you that you can download. And she shows you how she tracked it and all of that. And so it's a very fun book. It's very inspiring. And she really makes a connection between spirituality. She's really into that. So she makes a connection between spirituality and forming on purpose daily activities that are more spiritual for you. I mean, they might sound mundane, but really they help you overall with all of, you know, your soul.
Book number 9 is The Shack, Where Tragedy Confronts Eternity, by William Paul Young. This was published in 2007. It was also made into a movie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And I've seen the movie too. I don't have The Shack. I gave it to somebody, I think, and I don't remember to whom, and I didn't get it back, so I have to get another one. But that story is so vivid in my mind. It shows you really what forgiveness is. Until I saw or read this book and also saw the movie about it, I thought I knew what forgiveness was, but no. And if people have seen the movie or read the book, they know that it starts off with a little girl being kidnapped and killed. And then the father blaming himself because he was gone for a minute, helping the other kids and all of that. And then he has a terrible story himself about his own father and how his father was brutal. So the whole thing is about, well, what does God really mean? And what is forgiveness really? And again, he happens to see his little girl in heaven, but he also sees his father in heaven. And he can't believe, how could his father be there? His father was so terrible and bad. And that's how it explores the whole theme of forgiveness and what does it really mean? And how we don't know the whole story again. We don't know what was going on with these people.
So book number 10 is one of your own books.
That's right.
And we always allow guests to have just one of their own. And actually, you've chosen one, and I've read a few of your books, and you've chosen one that I think every parent, every teacher, every person should have, which is Discover Your Child's Learning Style. By yourself and also Victoria Kindle Hodson.
Yes.
So tell us about this book.
So this book is about looking for what's right in everyone and not what's wrong with you, and starting with our kids. So even though it's called Discover Your Child's Learning Style, it's also about us. So even if you don't have any kids and you read it, you'll learn more about yourself and other people, other adults, other people's kids, whoever, just people. So it's all about finding your strengths and focusing on your strengths and appreciating them and moving forward with them and just knowing that everybody has different strengths. And we can either try to compete and always be ahead of somebody else, or we can collaborate and use our strengths for collaboration. And that's what it's about. And we actually have an assessment that we have a mini version of it that you can download with a link from the book, or you could also purchase a full one. But the idea is the assessment goes through different aspects of your personality to see what strengths there are. And it looks at your dispositions, your modalities, your interests, your talents, and your best work environment.
And
then we go from there.
Also, I'll share with our viewers my take on the book, because I found it incredibly useful many years ago when I first came across it in helping my daughter with my grandson, who was eventually diagnosed as ASD. And what really pleased me about this book is how you can change the way that you are teaching a child simply by knowing their gifts and their strengths. And the assessments help you understand a child's learning style. And if a parent, a homeschooler perhaps, you know, has a particular curriculum, if they just switch that in a way that works with that child's life, if, you know, if they're a performer, if they are the scientist, if they are, you know, the inventor, then you can teach them using all of those strengths, using all of those qualities that they're already showing, and they'll enjoy it a lot more and they'll learn a lot more because you're teaching them according to their strengths.
That's right. And they feel good, and you're acknowledging that those are real, legitimate strengths.
Yes.
And it's, you know, a lot of teachers are also using it in schools, not as many as we would hope, but especially for homeschoolers or in your homework time, if your child goes to a traditional school, but in homework time, you can do all kinds of things if you know. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as changing the color on your table. I that's always comes to mind because this parent wrote and said, you know, read your book, did the assessment. And of course she knows what colors her child likes and doesn't like, but she never thought about it in terms of, will it help you focus? Will it help your learning? And so the daughter was doing homework and she would take forever to do her homework and, you know, fidget and whatever. 3 hours later, maybe she was finished. And when she read about the color part, she realized that the table they were working on was the color that a color that her daughter couldn't stand. So she put a tablecloth on there with a color that she liked. And all of a sudden, she was just sitting down doing her homework. She was done it up. Now, that's not always the case, that it's just that, you know, that one thing. But it, you can see how powerful even just one thing can be. Because as people, we react differently to just even the environment and to a color. It can be as simple as that. So sometimes just changing a couple of things can make a big difference. Sometimes it's about switching the way you're actually learning the material. If you're memorizing math facts, you might have to use pictures and suggest that the kids draw little cartoony things if they can do that. I mean, a lot of kids love doing that, but they don't have permission to or don't realize they could to help them memorize. Or another trick I've used for those that have to move around is bounce a ball on a card that, you know, like 3 times 4 is 12, and you bounce the ball on the card. And if you have a little basket, you can do a basket or just bounce, whatever. But it's the movement that is helping them learn. So there are all kinds of tricks like this.
Yeah. Tell me about your CARES and FITS principles.
Yes.
CARES and FITT.
Yes. So those are kind of like the bookmarks to our book at the beginning and the end. And the CARES is to just be mindful that, you know, the C means celebrate the child you have. If you're a teacher, celebrate the student you have. If it's about you, celebrate the person you are. That kind of thing. And then the A is accept your role as the coach, your child's coach, your student's coach, your own coach, the two of them together, meaning you have these wonderful, amazing gifts and talents, and appreciate them and accept them and celebrate them. And then don't wish you had that or you had that or you were more like your brother or your, you know, your friend. Because we all have different strengths, and that's the whole point. Respond rather than react. So if going back to a student, if the student is what we would call acting up or not doing what they're supposed to be doing, there's a reason for it. They're not just doing it just to do it, just to be mean to you. But especially kids, they don't know what to say and they don't have any choice in the matter. So they don't know how to have a conversation, say, you know what, this really isn't working for me. Is there another way that we can figure this out? I mean, even adults have trouble saying that, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine being a kid and you don't have any voice, really, especially about school. So instead of, sit down and stop moving around and whatever we say, that we would respond instead of react. I notice that every time you do math, you have trouble really sitting in that chair. What's going on? Let's talk about it. Maybe they just need one of those, what do you call it? Like the exercise balls, you know?
Yeah, the Pilates balls or something.
A lot of
yeah.
classrooms now are doing that because some kids, just that little movement. It wouldn't be for me. It wouldn't be for other kids. And one of the things that sometimes you hear, especially from teachers, is, well, if I did it for one, I would have to do it for everybody. Well, first of all, so what? If it works for everybody, why not? But the thing really is, they don't all want that. If one kid needs headphones to block out the noise or to have a little music while they're working, other kids don't want it. They only want it if it's what they need and what works for them. They might want to try it out, but right away it's like, oh no, I don't want that. So it's about meeting everybody's needs. So the E is expand your view of how learning takes place. It can be outside, it can be on the floor. I did all my homework on the floor. Nobody ever bothered me because I got all A's. But a lot of times, you know, parents, you can't be on the floor. You have to be on a desk. Well, sometimes you have to stand up at a tall table. That works for some people. So expand your view of how learning takes place. And then S is stop using outside in definitions of intelligence, like standardized tests and things like that. Because we're very, very smart, but it can't all be assessed by an assessment. And IQ tests tell very little of the story, for one. Yeah. So those are the CARES, CARES. And then the FIT are focus on solutions, track success. The F is focus on solutions. The I is identify goals. So the focus on solutions, again, let's work together. Let's figure this out. Instead of now you have to do this because you didn't do that. Or let's figure this out. There's always a solution. We had a guy that poured concrete for us the other day, and then there were tiny little cracks. And he goes, oh, okay, well, I'll call my concrete guy. And I said, oh, no, do you have to really? Because he said, we might have to do this and that. Oh, I'm so sorry. You have to do. He goes, it's okay. There's always a solution. And that's how we should be talking about everything, school, learning, the world, whatever. There's always a solution if we can sit down and figure it out. Identify the child's goals is the I. We have goals. You're supposed to be here in math and here and, you know, and do this. And well, what are the child's goals? Something has to be relevant to your life. And there are some kids, especially of certain dispositions, that if they can't see a connection, why am I learning algebra? What does it have to do with anything or history or whatever? They can't get it because it's meaningless. It makes no sense. Just putting in the connection can be so helpful and seeing what their goals are. Well, I want to be a vet. Oh, okay. Well, this is how math would help you with that. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't want to do math right now, but you'll need it for blah, blah, blah. T is take the pressure off when needed. When we're working with homeschoolers, for example, we can say, because we're a lot freer, you're not ready to read yet. Let's wait. You don't have to read this year. I've done this so many times. And usually in just a couple months, the kids want to read and they ask to read or whatever the, you know, subject is. It doesn't have to be reading. So you take the pressure off, they relax, you let them thrive in their own strengths, talents, interests. And then they're like, oh, if I can do this, I can probably do that. And then the other T, the last T for FIT is track successes rather than failures. This one's so important. First of all, failures can be looked at in different ways. Like we all know the story of Thomas Edison, you know, what is it, 10,000 experiments. And he said, how can you keep doing this? You keep failing. He said, I'm not failing. I'm just finding another way that doesn't do this. So I'm close. Mm-hmm. So, but tracking successes, hey, today you got one more than yesterday, or teaching them themselves, students, to track their own successes. And it could be in anything. It could be in, you know, doing yoga or gardening or cleaning the garage or whatever. But then you grow up. If we do this with students when they're young, they grow up with that mindset. Possibilities, solutions, tracking their own successes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you say that, you know, many people grow up with a mistaken identity. Mm. And, you know, one of your other books that I like is, you know, Midlife Crisis Begins in Kindergarten. And, you know, I'll hold my hand up for that one.
Yeah. That's like a little story. It's a sort of a cartoony story. Yes. To show what happens. We go into kindergarten or preschool. Most kids are all excited and they want to go. And then pretty soon the whole thing shows a star and it keeps diminishing and diminishing and diminishing because you learn, oh no, they can do that and I can't. Oh no, she yelled at me for looking out the window and seeing the big truck that was out there that was so interesting. And oh no, you know, and pretty soon let me just say this. I've worked with so many adults and they can't remember what they like or what they're good at. And we have to go back to when they were a kid and what they remember. School always comes up. Well, I could never do that job. I really would love to do that job, but I really can't because I'm not smart enough. Because in third grade, they told me whatever. Or I always had trouble in school. I couldn't pass tests. Well, so what? That has nothing really to do with anything. But that's how you grow up. That's what you think. And it keeps you from doing what all of these books are saying. Be who you are. Use your talents, skills, strengths to contribute to the world. And you can't do that if you think that you don't have anything to contribute. So it's very important. And it starts in kindergarten or preschool if they are in those kinds of settings, school type settings that are already teaching you that you're not good enough.
Yeah, and I think there are many people listening to this and viewing this who can really relate to that. Yeah. So all of your books really, you know, are very useful to adults, but you also have, and we've only got a few minutes left, but you also have the Power Traits for Life. You have a Learning Success Institute, and this is a place that any of us, we can go online, we can do some of the assessments, and we can find out more about ourselves.
Yeah. You can go to powertraitsforlife.com. And that's where just about all the information is on anything we're talking about. The Power of You Now is the adult program that we have to help you recuperate, like you had said at the beginning, from anything that happened to you that's keeping you back. So all of it is there. And also, I have my own website, schoolathomemadeeasier.com. And all the books are there and lots of other information is there. And again, it's not just for if you're homeschooling, but for even kids who are going to traditional school. But still, they're at home. You're doing something with them. Excuse me. Or you can have discussions with the teacher, et cetera. In our book, Discover Your Child's Learning Style, we actually have a chapter about how to connect with the teacher and talk about these kinds of things.
Do you find the teachers responsive?
It depends. Some are very and some not at all. But here's the interesting thing. Even if just one person, I've had kids where the families come for a consultation, and I'll go over their self-portrait, that's the name of our assessment, and say, oh my gosh, you're so high in inventing. This is like Albert Einstein or Thomas Edison. That's the same type as you. And they just light up. And I'm not telling any fibs, it's true. They have that kind of personality, those strengths. And so a lot of times, even if nothing has changed, but we've had this discussion, the kids start doing better at school. Because I also tell them that, you know, your teachers are doing the best they can, but they don't know about some of this information. So let's give you some tricks. So when you're there and this happens and you're starting to feel a little bad or whatever, see if you can do this. So we come up with strategies for them. Mm-hmm. And so they feel so good already just from that little bit that some things change for them just like that.
I mean, it's so important, isn't it? Because, I mean, you can crush them for life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Mary Emma Willis, thank you so much for adding your 10 best list to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations.
You're very welcome. I'm honored to be in your group. Thank you so much.
And thank you too for all the wonderful work that you're doing with our children. They so desperately need it.
You're welcome. And thank you.
Thank you. So for more information about Mary Emma Willis's work, courses, mentoring and retreats, you can visit three websites: powertraitsforlife.com, aselfportraitonline.com, and schoolathomemadeeasier.com. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 best interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and thank you again to Mary Emma Willis.
Thank you.